Taking a look now at digital photography with Jack Socha of Spring Grove, Minnesota. He's taught photography at Western Technical College in La Crosse in the Lifelong Learning Program. He has created a mixed media CD. It's called How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. He's written articles for Shutterbug and eDigital Photo and Imaging. He's been a guest on our program for quite a while now, and I'm really pleased to have him back with us today to talk about those digital cameras. Maybe you've got one. Probably you have. Most people have these days. My goodness. You may have questions about how to use your camera, or maybe you're looking to buy a new digital and want to know about what's out there. Certainly, Jack can talk with us about that. Give us a call with your question at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. And Jack's with us by phone today. Hi, Jack. Thanks for taking time to be with us.
Oh, thank you for having me on again. Yeah, spring has sprung and the grass is grizz, as they used to say out here. I was really shocked yesterday at one of my, I guess you'd call it day jobs, as I do some media relations for the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe here in La Crosse. And yesterday, there was the minute the weather gets warmer, crowds come out, and there was actually somebody who came out with a film camera shooting slides. And I talked to this person, and I said, when is the last time you know, there was film still in the camera from who knows how long ago. So when is the last time you had slides developed? Because I don't even know if there's a lot of places that will even do that anymore.
Yeah.
Everybody else had digital cameras. I almost fell off my chair. You know, wow, look, you're shooting film. But, you know, we were talking a little bit about folks who are getting ready for spring shooting, and there are some things you really should do to kind of prep your camera if you haven't used it for a while, or especially if you're brand new with it. So if we have time today, I'd like to mention a couple of those, including something pretty esoteric sounding called a firmware upgrade.
Oh, well, okay. What are firmware upgrades for a camera?
It's the hardest part of all the rest. The rest is just cleaning tips, but there is software inside of digital cameras that runs the camera just like the software that runs your computer. And just like software that runs your computer, they frequently find little things to improve it to make it better, or in some cases, they find little bugs. I had one Minolta Damage, which about 6 months after it came out, they offered this thing called a firmware upgrade, which improved the focusing accuracy and the speed of focusing, and did a couple of other things. And it's a little bit intimidating, and you really have to follow the instructions carefully. So if you're not versed with computers, you find somebody who is. Normally, you go to the website, and you go to the support section, and you look and see if there is a firmware update or firmware upgrade for your particular model. Then you download the software. Usually you put it on the storage card, the same kind as you use in the camera, and then you put the storage card in the camera and turn the camera on. And one of two things will happen. Either it'll automatically begin loading this new updated firmware into the camera, or you'll have to press a couple of buttons while you turn the camera on to make it happen. And what this does is it erases the existing program that's built into the camera and replaces it with a new updated version. They do tell you right up front, make sure your batteries are fully charged or you're on an AC adapter, because if your camera dies in the middle of the process, you may render it inoperable and have to go back to the shop.
Who
needs an upgrade? Not all cameras have them, but you may have a camera that you bought just a month ago, and you might be surprised there's an upgrade. Or you may have a camera you've had for a couple of years, and you never noticed it, but if you go to the website of the manufacturer, there's an upgrade that will improve something about it.
And so it's well worth a look.
Yeah, definitely. And like I say, it's not that difficult to do, but read the instructions extremely carefully.
Okay. Well, Paul in Grafton's online with a question for you. So let's go to Paul. Hi, Paul.
Good morning. I'm one of those throwbacks you were just talking about who still shoots film.
All right.
But I've got a question for you. How much do you know about medium format digital photography?
Well, you know, for a while there were cameras that were medium format that accepted backs. I mean, I've seen 4x5 view cameras that have digital backs on them, but you could probably buy a good-sized house for the price of the back.
Well, and that's the problem. And my question was, if you had, let's say, in the past, the advantage of digital format was obvious, that you got a bigger negative.
Mm-hmm.
But now, if you had a medium format back with, let's just to pick a number, let's say 25-megapixel sensor and a 35-millimeter camera with a 25-millimeter or megapixel sensor, would there be a difference in quality?
Well, there would be a difference in quality on the original, but by the time you get to the ad agency and get it reproduced in a magazine, the answer is no. This is why, sadly, for a lot of us, medium format equipment that was formerly a professional's choice is going for nothing on the market anymore because they have been abandoned in gigantic amounts. And also, again, the cost of putting a digital back on a Hasselblad is exorbitant, and the increase in quality, especially, like I say, when you're going to have it reproduced in a magazine or other publication, just really isn't there to make it worth doing.
And there's my dilemma, because I shoot with Contax medium format, which is
right.
Wonderful equipment, but
right.
A back for that's about $40,000.
That tends to slow me down.
Right. Where a digital 35 with basically the same resolution is about $4,000 or $5,000.
Exactly. And frankly, that is the way most pros are going, which is why you are seeing medium format film equipment drastically reduced in price. Just drastically.
Okay, but the bottom line is by the time it gets... Well, what about large prints? Will there be a difference there?
Again, if you're going to be doing really salon prints, there might be, but to gain that extra 5% increase in quality, you have to go from $4,000 to $40,000. There really is some question as to whether it's worth it. You might be better off banking that $35,000, waiting 2 years and buying another camera.
And I have just one more quick question, if I can.
Sure.
One of the things, I do landscape photography, and one of the reasons I haven't switched yet from film is I still have a couple specialty panoramic cameras, a Linhof Technorama and a Noblex. Obviously, those will never be digital.
Unfortunately not, no.
But
they do now have extremely sophisticated stitching programs that allow you to take multiple shots and stitch them together.
And therein lies the question, if it's a windy day and tree leaves are blowing around, will that stitching software still work?
Yes, it will. You may have to do a little bit of work with Photoshop. It has gotten extremely good, and there are even programs now that will allow you to use, for example, a fisheye-type lens and stitch photos together so that a person looking on a computer screen and using a mouse can view the scene in a 3D environment where they can turn around and look behind them.
Hmm.
Wow. So I would definitely consider getting the 35-millimeter equivalent equipment because of those kind of lenses that are available.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Paul. Appreciate your call. And you can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. Let's go to Todd and Holman next. Hi, Todd.
Morning, Jack and Larry. I used my Saturday La Crosse Tribune this morning, Jack, to sign up for your class coming up in early April.
Oh, thank you very much. I teach at Western Technical College in the lifelong learning department, and we have always a good crew who comes over to learn how to run their cameras.
My wife and I are both going to take it. We're planning on bringing a new camera. We've currently got an old 3-megapixel, and I had recently looked at the Kodak Z1485 that I heard you talk about on a previous show. But it doesn't have the optical viewfinder, and I'm just really hesitant. Is there a similar? I notice a lot of the Canons are big on having the optical viewfinder. Is there something similar in place?
There might be something in the Canon range. I'm just staring right now at one of my favorite sites to check out these things. It's called Steve's Digicams. If you do a Google search for it, Steve's Digicams, they have the 2009 reviews, and you could look at the cameras by megapixel and see what the features are. Sadly, the manufacturers seem to think that everybody wants to look at an electronic screen, and that's okay if you're indoors, but sometimes I like using the optical one, especially outdoors, and sometimes if the screen can be folded in so it's not even facing the outside, I like doing that. And I must admit the Canon PowerShots tend to be the ones that tend to have those kind of features. So I'd go to Steve's Digicams, and I would look up the Canon PowerShots and do a little comparison.
Very good. We'll see you in April. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. And let's go to Jamie in Stevens Point. Hi, Jamie.
Hi. Thanks for
taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question about my Canon Digital Rebel XT.
Mm-hmm.
My lens, I have two of them, and they both have gone extremely blurry. I can't get them to focus, and I'm wondering if that's a big deal or not.
Yeah. if both of them don't focus, chances are it's something in the camera body that's having
okay.
a problem.
Okay.
I would check with, if you know, there's tons of people who have Canon SLRs out there.
Okay.
Probably somebody that you know or work with has one. I would take your lenses and try it on someone else's camera body, and if it works just fine on that situation, then you know the culprit is your camera. How old is the Canon body?
I purchased it probably 3 years ago.
Yeah, it's outside of the warranty at this point. One thing you may look into, we talked about earlier, is a firmware upgrade. There may be something that has gone wrong with the actual firmware inside, and that may
okay.
be one possible thing, although more likely it's something mechanical. Now, occasionally, we do find known defects in these cameras, and when you contact the company, if you're lucky, they say, oh, yeah, that's a problem we've been having, and they may fix it.
Okay.
So check Canon support, maybe do a Google search for your particular model of camera and a discussion forum talking about blurry pictures and see what happens.
All right. Well, okay. I will try that.
Worst comes to worst, keep the lenses because the new bodies are not that terribly expensive, and so maybe you want to buy a new camera body.
That's a good point.
Okay.
Thanks so much. Take care.
Sure, bye-bye.
Thanks, Jamie. Thank you for calling. And, Jack, you were talking about some other things to do in spring.
Yeah, traditionally every shooting season, the companies would come out with advice about cleaning battery contacts and cleaning lenses, basically doing what they used to call a clean oil and adjust, a CLA of your camera. We don't oil the digital cameras much anymore, but cleaning them is still a big deal. And one area that I really suggest people look at carefully is the lens, the front lens element, because dirt and oil can get onto that from environmental factors, and it can really dull the look of a picture. But you have to be careful how you clean the lens. So there's a very delicate coating on that lens, an anti-reflection coating, and you should use either an approved photo cleaning cloth or an approved photo cleaning tissue. And as I say in the article, I stuck an article on the website that covers all this. If you're using one of those tissues that you keep, the microfiber cloths, when you're done, put them back in something clean.
Yeah,
I knew one guy used to stick it back in his pants pocket with, pocket lint and part of an old Twinkie he was carrying. And it's just not a good idea. It gets on the cloth. And also, if you are still using lens cleaning liquid and a disposable tissue, do not drop the liquid on the lens.
Oh, do not drop it on the lens. We'll find out some more about that as we visit with Jack Socha here on the Ideas Network. We're talking digital photography and digital cameras today with Jack Socha of Spring Grove, Minnesota, who teaches photography, writes for Shutterbug, and has written for eDigital Photo and Imaging. Really pleased to have him with us today. Give us a call with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Or email at talk@wpr.org. And Jack, before we go to the phones, we're talking about lens cleaning, and you were talking about liquids and not dropping the liquids lens cleaners right on the lens itself.
Yeah, the reason you don't want to do that is that it's possible that, you squirt the little bottle with the idea of putting a drop on the lens and end up squirting quite a bit more out of it. And then it runs down the side of the lens and could literally get inside the lens assembly itself, which is going to really do a job on that lens. So always put it on the cloth if you do use a liquid lens cleaner. And please don't use, in a pinch, something like a glass cleaner you use for cleaning your porch windows or one of these all-purpose cleaners that you use on your stovetop, because these can actually have a bit of a solvent action to them, maybe leave a film on the lens. So you really have to use things specifically designed for lens cleaning. The same thing with the screen on the back of the camera. That's another area where you simply can't just rub that thing to try to get things off it. It can get scratched very easily, or there could be a solvent action from an unapproved cleaner that might cause it to fog over. The back side of the camera is really one of the more delicate areas if you're going to be going out doing spring shooting, it's not like the old days where you could drop the Instamatic in the back of the bag with your lunch and it would still keep working. It's unfortunate that most camera companies leave that big, huge screen exposed to the environment, which means pencils, pens, lipstick, cases, and it can get cracked very, very easily. So you may also, in your getting ready to get your camera going, look around and see if there is a plastic protector that snaps on over that to give it more protection as well. They don't cost very much money, and they're usually sold on a blister pack in a store someplace, a camera store.
All right. Well, let's go to the phones, and Frank and Stanley next. Hi, Frank.
Good morning. Or afternoon, whatever it is. But I have about $700-$800, maybe $900 to spend on a digital SLR, and I'm looking for a recommendation.
Okay. What kind of film camera did you use?
Well, I have a Nikon, and I have Pentaxes and 35 millimeters.
Okay. Now, do you still have those?
Yes.
Okay. Well, your Nikon, well, you know what your Nikon mount was? The Pentax, were they screw mount or K mount?
It's an N60 with, it's only about 5 years old or
yeah,
six.
Yeah, a bayonet mount, a bayonet's in.
Yeah.
See, the reason I'm asking is it'd be possible for you to purchase a the same brand in a digital. There is a Pentax K2000, which would accept your K-mount lenses, and you might not get the full functioning of all of the features of the camera, but you'd still be able to use the lenses. At the same time, there are the Nikon ones will take your Nikon lenses as well with the same limitations. So I guess a lot would depend on if you have any lenses that you absolutely love. If you really love your Nikon lenses and you still want to keep using them, you may want to get a Nikon body. If you have a large collection of the K-mount lenses, you may want to buy a Pentax K2000, for example.
It just depends
on which lenses you have. Keep in mind, though, that if you do put a film camera lens on a digital body, because the sensor is smaller, it effectively increases the magnification by about 1.5. So your 135-millimeter lens will act like it's a more powerful lens. Your wide-angle lenses will not act as wide.
Hmm.
But I would look into that. If you had screw-mount lenses, if you're an old camera like me with old screw-mount lenses, the Canon EOS cameras, actually, you can buy an adapter to screw in old screw-mount lenses, and you can also do that with the Sony SLRs, which used to be Minolta, and they also have built-in image stabilization in the body, so you can put your 50-year-old screw-mount lens on your new Sony and get modern things out of it.
Perfect. Good luck, Frank. Thank you for calling. And let's go to Dean in Lake of the Hills, Illinois. Hi, Dean.
How you doing? I got a Kodak EasyShare that I've had for a few years now, and I never actually bothered to put a disc card, a megapixel disc card in there. And recently went over and bought a 4 megapixel, so as soon as I stuck it in this morning, it said go ahead and format.
Yeah.
And then it said continue. So I pressed continue. It went on to, it looked like it was going to do something, but just kind of kept on kicking back and not giving me any kind of message.
Yeah. Let me tell you what's going on. And this is something we talked about, I think, last time, but not everybody is aware of it. The people who make the SD cards have now made higher capacity ones. They're called HCSD. Anything over 2 gigabytes is an HCSD. And so consequently, unless your camera is designated to accept that card, it won't work with it properly.
So that's most likely an HCSD.
Yeah, if your card says HCSD, it's a high-capacity one. The chances are pretty good that it is. I've gone as far as 2 gigabytes on the SD card, and I think the crossover is at 4. I know I've got some 6 that are definitely. So just take a look at the card. If it says HCSD and the camera doesn't say it on the bottom, and it probably doesn't if it's 3 years old or older, that's what's going on.
All right.
So time for a new camera. Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
Thanks for calling, Dean. Mike and Seneca, on to you now. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, hi. Thanks. I have a couple of questions here. I have a Kodak EasyShare 653, I think it is. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I have a couple disturbing things about it. 653, I'm sorry.
Okay.
And incidentally, I don't know who writes these books up, but it was recommended this camera is the most user-friendly of all the cameras on the market, and it isn't. and I had some hidden in the software. There's some hidden menus. I got it up one time to set the date, calendar, and that stuff, and I couldn't get it up again. Then accidentally, I got it on some foreign language, and then tried to get it back. I had to call the factory, and he took me through it step by step. Finally, I got it back in English. But what's disturbing, my mother had a 90th birthday, and there was a lot of pictures on there, and they vanished. And I know I didn't delete anything because I had two different chips, one for activity outside and one other one, and they're gone. The other thing was the batteries go real fast on it. And I talked to the place I bought it. I do have one of these policies.
Mm-hmm.
And incidentally, those policies you buy for if you drop the camera, they won't kick in until after the warranty's gone.
Right, yeah. Those policies, you've got to read the fine print really quickly. I'm more worried about the lost pictures of the birthday. There's a couple of things that could be going on. One is that that camera does have some built-in internal memory. Have you tried taking the card out and turning the camera on and putting the camera on play and see if the pictures show up?
Well, I had it over to a computer person that knows more than I do, and I think we tried that.
Okay.
There was also, excuse me a second, there was also some other pictures, very valuable ones I had on there, and I couldn't find them on the chips, and it ended up, I agree, then they were in that memory, but I didn't find my mother's stuff in there.
Okay, so then the other possibility is that for some reason they have been erased off the card. If you haven't kept using the card, if you haven't used it since you took the pictures, it's possible to reclaim those pictures, but you're going to have to look around for some software. Now, I was just told that Lexar, if you have Lexar cards, there's not every card that Lexar makes, but some of the ones, the Ultra ones, that if you contact them, they will actually send you at no charge some recovery software that brings back accidentally deleted images from their brand only. But also, there are both commercial and, I suspect, a couple of so-called freeware products that you can use where you put the card in a computer, and then this looks at the files on the card. Basically, when you erase a file, it doesn't really erase it. It just removes the first letter of the file name, which means that if the computer or the camera can't see it anymore. And what the software does, it allows you to put that letter back in and bring the picture back. So you might look into some software for reclaiming those photos, but whatever you do, don't keep using the cards taking more pictures, because those are kind of like empty parking spaces that they're going to get filled again with something else.
Oh, okay.
But once you do that, then it's too late.
Well, maybe not all of them.
Maybe not all.
Yeah, but I would stop using the cards until you had them looked at.
All right, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And, boy, more callers online. Let's go to, before we do that, you mentioned freeware. And I know on your website you have lots of freeware and other things that people can find useful.
Yeah, one of the most popular articles I've got on the site, and by the way, the site is acpress.com, acpress.com. I have a page up there of five free image editing programs. And when I say free, I mean free, not trial, not demo, not shareware, not nagware, just plain free. And they're ones that I use constantly. My favorite one is from a French fellow. It's called Photo Filter, and I use it for everything, from my eBay ads to making display prints. It's just terrific. Go to acpress.com. You'll see three red buttons. One is information about ordering our CD on digital cameras. One is our podcast. The one in the middle, it says Other AC Press Pages. You click on that, and you'll find a number of articles divided up. And there's a photography section. There's a new article about keeping your camera clean based on what we're talking about today. But right below that is the article on the free image editing software. And then it shows you where you can download it. It's really tremendous stuff. It really is.
So go to acpress.com.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right. Let's go to Steve in Hayward next. Hello, Steve.
Hello. Say, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, I have a question. I'm starting a new career, and it requires pictures in files that are sent via email.
Mm-hmm.
And they recommend that I have the resolution at 480/640. Is that right? Okay, so my question is, do I have to get a camera that does that, or do I do it in the program that stores the pictures?
Oh, let me give you two quick answers. Number one, most cameras have adjustable resolution, and you can crank them down to 640 by 480, which is what cameras started with about 10 years ago. But also, virtually every program on the market that you can buy or get for free, including the ones that are on the website, will let you resize the picture down that small. And I would really suggest shooting the pictures at the full size and then making them smaller with the software.
Okay, so then when I have a program like Photoshop or something.
Well, if you want to spend the money for Photoshop, you certainly can, but you can grab one of the free programs at the website. One is called Irfan View, and it's got a place there where you bring up the picture, click on resize. The first thing you'll see is 640 by 480. You click the button, and it just drops it down to that size, and you save it with a different name.
Okay, but what's the name of the program?
Well, it's called Irfan View, IrfanView, and there's an article about it and the other programs at acpress.com.
acplus.com?
AC Press, like Audio Computer Press, P-R-E-S-S.
acpress.com.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that helped me a lot. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yep. As much as I like Photoshop, please don't spend $600 to resize photos.
Okay, let's go to Lisa in Appleton. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. You may have addressed this before, but it seems like every time you're on, I'm in the car and I can't call.
Okay.
I have a Minolta Dmage 7.
Oh, yes, I've got one too.
And we loved it, and until something happened, and it's like the lens isn't seeing anything anymore.
Hmm.
It's all black. And I looked it up on the computer, and it seems like other people have this problem.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently Minolta doesn't exist anymore?
Minolta has been absorbed by Sony.
That is correct. And so we haven't been able to get any response, you know, in sending them information. And, of course, since then, I mean, you know, we loved this camera because it had 5 megapixels, which was awesome when we bought it.
I know. And I bought that same camera when it first came out. It was $1,200. And I paid 1 year same as cash for a year, $100 a month.
Yeah,
and now, if you look on eBay, they're like $125.
Yeah, I was thrilled. I think I paid like $600 or $700 for it.
You got a better deal than I did. But it's still a good camera and is one of the few that actually will shoot infrared pictures if you put an infrared filter on the front, which is why I keep it. What you may want to look into, we talked about firmware upgrades. There were several firmware upgrades for that camera. And if you do, just do a Google search for Minolta Dmage 7 firmware upgrade.
Okay.
And download that file, pop it in on the card, pop it in the camera, follow the instructions. That may bring it back to life.
Oh, boy.
But if that fails, it's really beyond economical repair at this point.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of what we thought, too, and when it first happened, we took it to our local camera shop, and they just looked at us and shook their heads and said, "We don't mess with these kinds of cameras."
Yeah, I'm afraid that with the change of the company ownership and the age of the camera, and the fact that you can buy used ones on eBay for well under $200, you're better off buying a different camera or another camera.
Yep.
Yeah, we wound up buying. We have a great camera now, and it fits in my pocket and.
Yeah, fabulous
pictures, but I still love this Dmage.
I've got mine with me right here at work. I use it all the time.
Okay.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. And you mentioned infrared. John emailed and hopes that you can talk about digital infrared on a budget for, let's say, the do-it-yourself home energy audits.
Well, the short answer is there is no do-it-yourself infrared on a budget because virtually all digital cameras now have an infrared filter built in to block infrared to make a higher quality photo. And if you want to shoot infrared, you have to remove that filter, which is extremely expensive and also permanent. The reason I keep this 8 or 9 year old Dmage 7, it was the original Minolta SLR, is that they didn't put the infrared filter in that camera. So you can buy one of these used ones and go buy an infrared filter, which I finally broke down and did, and you can take infrared photos with that particular camera. So your least expensive way to go is to go on to some auction site, find the original Minolta Dimage 7, not the 7i or whatever, the first one, buy that camera, and then buy an infrared filter.
All right, there you have it. Let's go to Sharon in Unalaska. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, how are you, Larry?
Good.
Say, my question has to do with, I have a Canon 20D SLR,
mm-hmm.
and it has three stubborn spots on the sensor. What do you suggest short of sending it into Canon?
Yes.
That's the answer.
Now, your camera does have an ultrasonic cleaning setting on it where it should shake that sensor. Now, there's a couple of things that could be going.
This model doesn't. I think a later one does.
Oh, yours doesn't.
Have
okay.
that little shaking.
There are a number of companies that do sell these cleaning kits for cleaning sensors. I'm scared to do that because
mm-hmm.
there's a very thin glass plate over that sensor, and if you get something on it or damage it, what you might do, and this is not particularly difficult, is buy not one of these canned air, but buy a rubber, like an ear syringe.
I've tried that.
And it's still, okay. Now, the other thing is, it may not be dust. It may be dead pixels.
Oh.
And there is some software available called Pixel Mapping that what you can do, basically, is take a pixel from next to the black spot and put it in there to cover it up.
Oh.
But if you're shooting several hundred pictures, it gets really, really old.
Mm-hmm.
So you may have dead pixels on your camera.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that.
Are they always in exactly the same place?
They are.
Yeah. It could be. There are some. There's something in some of the software out there that allows what they call pixel mapping, where it always goes to those pixels and replaces them.
Okay.
It's annoying, but it's a fix.
Uh huh. And what? Are the Canon people pretty good about,
Is it under warranty?
No, it's not under warranty.
Yeah, they're not real good about it. I mean, it's out of warranty. Probably they're not going to do much. See if you can do a Google search for a pixel mapping software. That may be your next best bet.
All right. I'll give that a try.
Sure.
Thanks.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Arthur wonders what you think of the Olympus E-System cameras.
They have not exactly flown off the shelf. They've got something called a four-thirds system, which is their idea of a new sensor. I've used a couple of them when I've been doing some tutoring. They're really attractive cameras. I think that basically because they have not become a super hot seller, that you should be able to find them at relatively bargain prices. Most times the reason you don't see a lot of a camera in a given geographic area is because the distributorship or the salespeople haven't been around that area. I mean, it's really funny. You may find them really hot in California and not hot in Madison. But the lenses are excellent. The ones I've handled, I've been very impressed with. It's just they have not been the king of the hill.
Mm-hmm.
A lot has to do with marketing and advertising.
Paul in Cambridge, Minnesota has a question for you. Paul, hello.
Hi. I've got an old-timer's question here. I've got an old Nikon F with a photatomic T on it. Head on it, and I'm being told that there's some photocells in the head unit that are going bad, and everywhere I go says there's no hope for it. It's a fantastic camera built like a tank. Is there any hope for it, in your words?
Yeah, well, once again, you'd have to go. I would buy a copy of Shutterbug magazine. I'd go look at the ads in the center for repair. There's a place called Photography on Bald Mountain. You're going to have to find another old-timer, and they're going to have to wait until another working model comes their way to cannibalize the parts.
Mm-hmm.
But, I'm afraid that there was a couple of resistors in those ones that when they went, and the parts are not available new. So you just have to kind of get in line.
No help at all from Nikon.
No, your best bet's to go out and find a prism top for it, and just get a handheld meter if you're still on the meter a little.
Yeah,
bit. I'm afraid that I know the feeling. Believe
okay.
me, I've been there and done that. The other problem is those meters use the mercury cell for accuracy, and the mercury cells aren't available anymore either.
Oh, well.
So I think maybe time to look into something different.
Yeah,
your lenses will still fit the newest Nikon digital. So if you go digital, you can still put those lenses on there.
All right. Good luck to you, Paul. Thanks very much. And Jack Thank you so much. And once again, what about your website? Where do people go to?
For information on the articles that we mentioned, including the article on cleaning your camera or the free software, for information on the CD, how to use the digital camera you just bought, all at one place, acpress.com, acpress.com.
Always a pleasure, Jack. Thank you so much. You'll come back and be with us again, I hope.
I certainly hope so.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye.
Jack Socha of Spring Grove, Minnesota, teaches photography. And by the way, on his website, he's teaching a class in La Crosse coming up, I believe, in April. So if that isn't filled yet, you can find out some more about the class at acpress.com or find out about that CD that he's got, How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. Coming up tomorrow, Phil Pelletieri, UW Extension entomologist, joins us to talk about insects and the plight of bats. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.